This time on episode 277 of Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., we discuss Runaways Season 1, Episode 7, Refraction, weekly Marvel news, and your feedback.
I'm Willie D. Nelson from All Things Good and Nerdy, a pop culture podcast, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other tantalizingly geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
You have been granted clearance by Director Alfonso Mack McKenzie. Stand by for a S.H.I.E.L.D. debriefing. All information to be discussed here is classified and may only be discussed among agents granted clearance by the S.H.I.E.L.D. director.
Now it's time for your scheduled debriefing. I'm Director SP.
I'm Agent Lauren.
And I'm Consultant Michelle.
Welcome to Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. We're a Marvel Comic Universe fan show. The show is recorded on Sunday, April 7th, 2019, live from the Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. studios and broadcast school-wide via www.geeks.live. Come on and join our live chat as we record. Ladies, happy National No Housework Day.
Woohoo!
I haven't been doing housework in a while.
You have a very good excuse.
Yes, you do. And welcome back to the podcast, Michelle.
Thank you very much.
We missed you.
We did.
I missed you guys, too.
Well, we're glad to have you, and we could talk all about it later. But for now, let's get back to the show. Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a fan-based podcast on the ABC television show Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is now in its 47th hiatus week following the Season 5 finale in May 2018. The multiple Marvel small screen series, and the Marvel cinematic and comic book universes in general.
Because of being high on life, and also Jonah.
If you would like to talk to us about being high on Jonah, you can visit our website, legendsofshield.com.
You can contact us via voicemail and leave us your rambling message about being high on life and Jonah at 844-THE-BUS-1. That's 844-843-2871.
You can find us on Facebook at Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Podcast.
You can find us on Twitter at Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You can see our wonderful faces on YouTube, www.youtube.com/GunnaGeek.
You can tell your Amazon device to enable Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. skill.
You can join our Discord server and chat about us, about all the things you're high on at GunnaGeek.com/Discord.
And remember, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a proud member of the GunnaGeek.com network. They might not be proud of us.
I think we just crossed the line today if we haven't before. All right. Yeah, it's the whole high on Jonah thing. We'll have to talk about that later. Meantime, we've welcomed Michelle back. We've got the show going. Let's just get into the episode. We're talking Runaways, specifically Season 1, Episode 7, Refraction. This aired December 19th, 2017 on Hulu. One thing that I did note while going through the air dates is that this went right through the holidays in 2017 to 2018. It did not skip a week. Matter of fact, it aired the day after Christmas. I think this is the deal with streaming services. They really don't care because it's a longevity thing. It's not necessarily the day of release.
Agreed. It means, okay, ratings work differently on streaming. We know that. We also know that they don't really like to release how they do ratings.
All I have to say is that Hulu learned its lesson and it actually just dumped Season 2 Runaways all on the same day.
That's probably for the best. I think this didn't help it, though, when it aired the episodes through the holidays. Didn't skip a Friday, just kept on going Friday, Friday, Friday release. I don't know who came up with that and who thought it was going to be a good idea or not. I wouldn't have thought it would have been a good idea because just so many people have so much going on during the holidays, whether it's for work and year end issues or family stuff going on in those last couple of weeks during the year.
Well, it's one of those things where they hope that instead of people, you know, getting the free week of Hulu and binging it all in one weekend and then dumping it, they'll be forced to buy it and then keep their subscription for as long as the series is going. You also saw this with like Handmaid's Tale and a couple of other series. But I think they realized, you know what, that's not really a great way to do it. You're going to get more viewers and goodwill by just doing it this way.
I could see somebody getting diverted to something else. Ooh, this came out. So you watch all of that and you forget to go back to Hulu.
Which is what happened to me with season one.
Mm. Well, I never watched it to begin with, so I'm watching it now and I love it. And we need to talk about it. So Michelle, let's get back to talking about this episode. Refraction was directed by
Peter Hoare. Has 23 directing credits starting in 2004. This is Peter's fourth Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. discussion appearance. Previously, episode 135, Daredevil, Penny and Dime. Episode 141, Daredevil, The Man in the Box. Episode 143, Daredevil, A Cold Day in Hell's Kitchen. Episode 201, Iron Fist, Black Tiger, Steals Heart. And episode 210, Defenders, Worst Behavior. Credits also include 8 Grange Hill, 5 Wire in the Blood, 1 Doctor Who, 2 Silk, 3 Daredevil, 4 The Last Kingdom, 1 Runaways, 2 Altered Carbon, 1 Cloak and Dagger, which season 2 has come back, and 2 of the Umbrella Academy, and is also a producer for Da Vinci's Demons and The Last Kingdom.
Very experienced director, and we're glad to see him back on the show. Lauren, this episode was also written by somebody familiar.
Indeed. The episode was written by Quentin Peoples, and if you recognize that name, it's because this is his fourth discussion appearance on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Previous appearances have been Iron Fist, Season 1, Episode 3, Rolling Thunder Cannon Punch, Iron Fist, Season 1, Episode 10, Black Tiger Steals Heart, and Inhumans, Episode 7, Havoc in the Hidden Land. He has 17 writing credits going back to 1993, a bunch of felt looks like self-produced movies, independent movies, but has also written 3 episodes of the TV show Flash Forward and 1 teleplay of that, 1 episode of The Last Ship, 4 episodes of Unforgettable, 3 episodes of 112263, of course, the 2 episodes of Iron Fist, the 1 episode of Inhumans, and 4 episodes of Runaways. So this will be his first appearance for that, and we can look forward to more from him.
I am very grateful that Quentin Peoples made it through to this episode, because you take a look at the previous 3 episodes that Quentin did with Iron Fist, and Inhumans, and we here on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't favor those series too well. So at least he got back to a good series.
Yeah, I think those were episodes where we agreed that, if memory serves, those weren't terrible episodes of those series. I remember by the end of Inhumans, it was like, oh, well, things are actually coming together. If we had actually gotten to this point earlier, maybe the show wouldn't have been so bad. And with Iron Fist, it was again, okay, things are coming together. The characters are starting to gel. If we had gotten to this point earlier, maybe things wouldn't have been so bad.
That is fair enough. And by the way, Marvel Comics for Runaways, and this series is based on, by Brian K. Vaughan and Adrian Alfano.
Alfona.
Adrian, again, I sincerely apologize. I'm going to have to practice with Lauren off camera. Okay. Refraction. We start talking about the episodes by going with the theme of the episode, and generally the theme equals the title of the episode, Refraction. So we're just going to start with that, especially since the episode kind of started with that. Michelle, do you have a guess at what refraction means to the episode?
Well, light refracts, and technically we don't really see like the now. At the atmosphere refracts the sun's light. Technically, the sun that we see is 8 minutes old because we're looking at it in the past. And it's like this episode is making you question about, like, now we finally see Jonah. We're looking at the past and what they thought is true, what perhaps we thought was true. You know, now we're seeing reasons behind it. We're looking at events through different lenses now, especially like with Leslie and Jonah and Carolina. I think that's probably what it's referring to.
I wondered if it had something to deal with the time travel that Victor was talking about at the beginning of the episode with the refraction. And he says something very specific, which I watched the beginning three times. He said, it might give you extra time to consider or reconsider what you are currently doing or deciding. And I wonder if you get to the end of the episode, if he wants to reconsider some of those actions, especially in light of the video from the future from Chase that was given. So I'm wondering if this is a little bit of foreshadowing to either the end of this series or the future of the series, because we definitely get Chase coming in and saying, don't pick up the Fistagon. So I'm just wondering if that has anything to do with it.
I think so. If you want to know what a good example of refraction is, look at water in a clear glass. Water has a different refraction point than air does. So when you look at an image through a water glass, it looks different because you're looking at it through a different medium, or a prism. White light goes through a prism, comes out on the other side as a rainbow. So these kids are all at, I guess, their refraction point. This is the point at which things can change. Whether it's don't pick up the Fistagons, pick up the Fistagons, things change a certain way. They could have changed a different way. They did not. With Molly, Molly told the Wilders, and things could have changed one way. They are trying to make it change a different way by getting her to safety. Just things like that. They're at a turning point. They're at a point of change.
Yeah, it was really interesting with the Wilders. You didn't know exactly what was going on with them wanting to deal with Molly. And they refer to things that have already happened. We'll get to that in a second. But when they meet with the Yorks, they're calling it an extraction or what was the other term that they used? An extraction or a
rescue?
Quarantine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they are not looking for any harm to come to Molly whatsoever. They're just trying to deal with the situation and get her away. And then they're going to have to deal with their son along the way as well. And they mentioned that too. Of course, they don't have the neat capability of sending their son off to cousins. Maybe they do. I don't know. But you get the sense that they're trying to look out for things versus trying to do harm. And then it goes back to what happened with Amy and what might have happened with the Hernandezes. And Tina seems to be labeled as the enemy again. And I don't know if that's true or not at this point.
Yeah, right now, I feel like everybody is playing a huge mind game on each other and on us, the audience. Because, yeah, the whole time I'm thinking, is Catherine Wilder going to try to hurt Molly? We know she's a ruthless lawyer. We know she'll do what it takes to get stuff done. But yeah, we find out, no, she wants to save Molly. And with the Minoru's, at the same time, we find out that Leslie Dean and Tina Minoru both consider each other their right-hand women.
Running the Pride group. Yep.
Yep.
And that Tina had backed Leslie's play of whatever happened with Frank. We generally think that's wiping his memory. And that, I guess, the whole group knows that Leslie has a relationship with Jonah.
Yep. And this episode, she's kind of heavy-handed about using that relationship with Jonah, because we see her go up to Victor's mom. I mean, not Victor's mom, Victor's wife, Chase's mom.
Janet.
And remind her about Jonah. And just, it feels like every time something happens, she pulls out the Jonah card to keep everybody in line. Like, you're going to stay with your husband because Jonah thinks that's for the best. You're going to work things out with your husband because Jonah thinks that's for the best.
And we do learn that what they erased from Frank was him seeing Leslie with Jonah, because they actually say Frank should not have any memory of Jonah. But he's actually starting to, because he, you know, he sees Jonah, and then he sees that picture of Leslie in the eighth grade with an adult Jonah, and he actually, that fuzzy vision comes to him. And then Jonah basically bribing him, you know, in order to keep him within the fold, to make sure he doesn't leave the family, so to speak, because Jonah is like, family is everything.
Since I'm the only one that hasn't really seen any further, I will speculate here about why he gave those healing gloves to Frank, why Jonah gave those healing gloves to Frank. And it's because that he is trying to manipulate what the end game of the church is, because he said, you don't want to, Leslie, you don't want to be around when the church goes down. And he's giving kind of a focus to the church, I guess, with the healing capabilities of Frank. And that's going to be enough to obscure other things that are happening at the same time. He does go to the construction site. He says the drill arrived. We do see in the future broadcast back to Victor's time machine that downtown LA is coming down. I think it's downtown LA is coming down. So it might have something to do with the drilling, and that Jonah knows about it, and he might just be redirecting this whole time, or it might be more to it. I don't know, but that's the easy plot device that I'm thinking of right now with that.
Yeah, Jonah seems to have his own agenda that at this point is very separate than what Leslie thought their agenda was. Suddenly he's back in her life and undermining her as she sees it, and I think rightly so. She sees him and he's showing up places where he shouldn't be, and he's talking to Frank and encouraging him to basically become a faith healer and just kind of showing up all over the place. And before, he was just this, you know, quiet hidden figure that she could just pull out his name whenever she needed to make things happen, and now he is actively back in her world and she can't control him. Something else that I realized when seeing that picture, we see her as a child. It took me a second to realize, oh, at first I was like, is that Carolina and she doesn't remember him? No, that was Leslie as a child with this person she's been sleeping with. That is horrible. That is creepy and horrible. That's grooming. That's awful. And again, that's a weird power thing. And I think now she was the one with power over him when he was, you know, the weird withered husk in the 2001 room. And now he's back with that power over her again. And it's just creepy and weird and awful. And I don't like it.
And she tries to confess to Frank. And Frank, I don't think he's totally getting it. He's more enthralled in Jonah being the prophet or whatever that the church is based off of that David wrote about. So I'm wondering what's going to happen in the future here. Is Frank going to go all in with Jonah and be on the Jonah high, so to speak, without any of the drugs? Or are they going to try to make a clean break? I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I'm seeing Frank going all in because here he is. Jonah's coming in telling him he's special. He's giving him this power to be a faith healer. And he's an actor. I don't know if you've ever met many actors, but actors crave validation. They want to be the center of attention. And here he is, somebody who hasn't been getting roles, hasn't been getting attention. His wife's the one who's been getting the attention. His wife is not paying attention to him. He's been told basically that he's a failure for not going ultra. Not in so many words, but that's kind of the undertone. You didn't do this thing. And here comes somebody to tell him that he's special. And again, this is a classic abuser tactic. You find somebody vulnerable and you say, I am the only one who sees something special in you. It's, again, it's creepy and weird and horrible. And the show is playing it right. But by doing so, it's extremely uncomfortable and creeping me out.
I will say the whole Frank getting involved in the church and the grooming that Leslie went under is something that is further explored in season 2.
Okay, I'm glad of that because that's something I don't want to see dropped. From a, hey, this is wrong standpoint and a, this is really interesting storytelling standpoint.
Yeah, it is not dropped.
Okay.
Well, Jonas High doesn't specifically apply just to Frank this episode. We find out that his high has been going on with Victor. We'll get to him in a second. But let's start with Mr. York and his microdose of Jonas serum, which now I question what the serum really is. And it's that creeps me out. But poor Dale, he just gets this small drop on him. And then he's just got this high on life. And then he goes through this awful withdrawal. And this is somebody that you might have imagined had played around a little bit with substances, maybe. And
they seem like the type to do ayahuasca. Let's face it.
Whatever. And he doesn't recognize it, but his wife, Stacy, does. And the poor guy. And then he mentions, oh man, if that, this is how I feel, I can't imagine what Victor is feeling. And like I said, we'll get to that in a minute, but that was an intense thing for just this microdose.
First of all, if that's a microdose, that was a big drop. Secondly, what kind of a horrible lab procedure was he doing where that thing just splashed on him?
Well, they don't exactly have the most sanitary lab.
No, and that's very disappointing to me. I mean, guys, PPE exists. You should have been wearing a lab coat. You should have been...
gloves, mask.
Yeah. Just, this is a foreign substance. You should have been using it under, like, a...
one of those box things, right?
Yeah, one of the what?
Those box things where you stick your hands in with the gloves and stuff.
Yeah, like a chemical hood. You should have been using it under like a negative flow chemical hood where it makes sure that you don't breathe in fumes. Just anything like that. It's an unknown substance. This isn't quite as bad as like the scientists in Prometheus basically licking everything they find, but it's not great. And granted, I've seen people do some really bad stuff in labs. But this is also, again, microdose. That was a big old blob on his arm. That was like a quarter-sized blob. I know they have to make it known for the audience, hey, this thing fell on his arm. But that was a big old sparkly goo drop there.
It was, and I'm kind of surprised that there's that much left in the vial after the injection that they gave Victor.
Yeah, I don't know if it like fell off the slide or what.
I think the inference is that the cap had some on it. Like have a jar of milk, right? And you take the cap off, you pour the milk, you put the cap back on. There's some drippage on the outside that comes down.
Which again, you wipe everything off and then dispose of that in a biohazard bag.
I'm not disagreeing.
I know. It's just they are bad scientists. They are very bad scientists.
Well, of course, they let the dinosaur escape and then go traipsing around the entire countryside and it comes right back home. So they have the distinct honor of telling Molly that she's going to leave. Molly has, this was a Molly centric episode, which is great. I like Molly as a character because she's just trying to have some fun. She loves to dance. Whatever you want to think about dance, she loves to dance. And she was there jamming out with the dance team as they're making the video for the open house, and she just wants to be a part of something, and she gets to be the team manager, which she's thinking in her positive mind is great. It's that she's getting abused a little bit, but she's really doing something that she likes, and then to come home and find out that she's being shipped off. My gosh, she went through the gamut of emotions. You saw her yellow eyes come out several times in the episode. She spilled the beans, so to speak, on the secret and dumped her double helix on the ground a couple of times. Well, once in the trash and once on the ground. This was a lot going on for Molly in this episode.
She just wants to belong somewhere. She already has these abandonment issues because her parents are dead. Then she tried to join up with a team, didn't get in, is just trying to belong now and be close to something she loves. And they're just crapping on her left and right. And then finally, when she's coming home to these people that she loves and trusts, to her mind, they're getting rid of her. And she's saying, like, this is literally my worst nightmare.
It is, because she wants to be part of her friends. which are all 2 years older, 2 or 3 years older than she is, and her new parents, and then her new parents are sending her off just when she's trying to find out more about her original parents, too. Bio parents. I don't know what you, what is the politically correct term?
Birth parents.
Birth parents. Okay. So she's got all that going on and is just an emotional wreck at the end of the episode. I don't know if she's actually going to get shipped off or not because of what happens at the end of the episode, but I can see it still happening. I don't know. We'll see there. And then the kids are getting together. There really wasn't a lot for like Carolina to do. She was in a couple of conversations, but I didn't really see any real positive story flow from her.
We see again her breaking away from the church. They're like, yeah, you're not at the Gibborim booth. She's like, well, I was the Gibborim booth and I'm not doing that this year. So no. When she's talking with Gert, who has also basically been kicked out of a group that she thought she would be in at the very beginning of the series. But, you know, she's a little hurt by that, but is like, okay, I'm going to go hang out with these people instead who are not being mean to me. But yeah, that's about what we see of Carolina, is her continuing to distance herself from both the church and her parents.
There's a couple of subtle things. First off, we do learn that she can fly. Chase kisses her and her reaction to that, and Gert asking her if she has feelings for Nico, and the whole confrontation, you know, and then her coming back to Gert about like how Gert feels about Chase. Those are little seeds that actually do bear fruit.
Yep.
As the season goes on.
Kind of saw that one coming.
Yep.
When it happened. And Nico, right now, she's in the middle of this weird thing between her parents. Like, she knows, because she's talking to Chase, that Janet is not going to go any further with Robert. Robert thinks that his life is about to change. And, of course, we know from Leslie and Tina that Tina's going to try to get back together. Leslie and Janet, Janet's done with the relationship. It was nice for a while, but if there's a chance at this relationship with Victor and their family, she's going to go back to that. So poor Robert's left there out on his own, and Nico's trying to help him say, well, maybe you should go back to mom. She'll forgive you, sort of thing. And it's just pretty tough episode for Nico there.
Yeah, it really is. So, yeah, we see her talking to her dad and trying to honestly talk some sense into him. And that's when she finds out, no, her dad loves Janet Stein. And Nico's like, oh boy. When her dad's like, no, you can come to our apartment. Janet's a really great cook and she'll cook for us. And Nico's just like, oh boy. So she goes and she spends most of her time hanging out with Alex and trying to find out, how did you know my mom's password? Because I know you didn't just lucky guess it. And Alex keeps evading the question.
Yeah, we never see the explanation, but I think she pins him down enough for him to have to answer the question. We just don't see it on camera.
I think we're going to find out the answer on camera.
That's fair.
I'm trying not to spoil anything.
Yeah.
It's got to be hard for you. I know.
If it's anything like in the comics, then I am also trying very hard not to spoil. But with regards to Janet, that conversation that Robert has with her of, you know, basically, you're an abused wife and you're going back to him and you're making all these excuses. And Janet snaps at him that, oh, I'm really glad that you've read all these self-help books, but you don't know what it's like. And the thing is, again, going back to cycles of abuse and like the grooming that we pointed out about with regards to Leslie and Jonah, this episode is really good about pointing that stuff out, because it does take, on average, about 7 tries for an abuse victim to leave their abuser. And a common thing is like, oh, this time they'll change. This, it's not safe. I have these things tying me back, whether it's financial or family or a lack of a safety net or just plain fear of what they'll do if you don't go back, or they're threatening to harm themselves, or it's not just as simple as leave. And the excuse that we hear Janet making of, I'm trying to keep my family whole, this was just a nice diversion, he's changing. Again, this is something that you hear very often from abuse victims. The thing is, in this series, what's backing it up is that we have Leslie saying Jonah wants this over her head as well. And we find out that, yeah, no matter what we see of happy, smiley new Victor, again, he hasn't really changed.
So Victor starts out the episode kind of on the Jonah high still. He's high on life. He's solving problems that has vexed his team of engineers and himself for quite some time. And he's just happy to go to the open house and be there to thank Chase's teachers because Chase is doing so well in the lab. And I'm not sure exactly when Victor went into withdrawal or flipped or whatever. You can say either way, because the flashbacks at the beginning, oh my gosh, hitting his son in the car and everything. I got sick to my stomach watching that because the inference was that the last hit in the car that his head bounced off the door or the window and knocked him unconscious. And that just didn't sit well to me. The kid abuse in that was just terrible. And it's kind of interesting that Victor got to there from holding Chase in his arms at the birth. And all of a sudden, he's such an abusive father. It went from 0 to 1,000 in just those few years. And we don't see exactly what happened. I was kind of just angered by seeing that. I know it's actors on the screen, but I know it happens in real life too. So I was not happy with that. And then during the day, you see Victor kind of do the same thing where he's going from the Jonah high to then going after Robert. And unless Janet came there, I think something would have happened there. Going after the coach to try to get Chase reinstated, and then going after Chase just because he was in the lab. And it's just really hard to watch.
Yeah. The thing is, abusers aren't monsters. In their minds, there is a perfectly logical chain that causes things. It's like a common thing that you'll hear is, why are you making me hurt you? And that's something that you see hinted at, I think, in this episode with the whole, you know, oh, he's so happy. But then in the car with the flashback when Victor's younger and Victor's like, you weren't even at my thing. He's at first he's snapping at, you know, little baby Chase because he didn't put his stuff in the trunk. So already he's on edge. And then Chase is like, we won. And he's like, oh, what? So do I got to take you somewhere? Yeah, and he's escalating. And then again, it's, oh, poor me, I'm doing important stuff. And finally, Chase snaps and Victor hits him. And to Victor's mind, he's the victim. He's the poor put upon dad with the son who won't stop talking back and can't listen to what he's doing or to what he was told to do. And why are you making me do this to you? And again, at the end of the episode with the Fistigons, I told you not to be in the lab without me. You're talking back to me. Why are you making me do this? It's, again, in that mind, that perfectly logical chain of events. But to an outsider's eyes, to a non-abuser's eyes, it's horrific. And it should be. And it's presented as such.
Because not only do you have that rationalization, Victor does say, I'm trying to make you a man. Victor, oh, there's something you'll find out about, like, Victor and Janet. But Victor's also been placed on this pedestal, not only by the world, by being, you know, this genius certified over and over and over again, but also within Pride. Because Jonah does what he does because it's Victor. Victor is needed. Leslie's needed. Some of you really aren't needed anymore, but Victor is definitely needed. So it's that double part with him. It is. I am this genius, this person needed by the world, by Pride, and I am trying to make my son into this man, and he just won't listen. So for him, it does seem like it's like a 180 from when Chase is born to when it is. But, you know, Lauren, you're right, because unfortunately been through this as well. It does seem rational and logical to Victor.
Yeah. And in addition, we also, again, a thing of abuser mentality is abusers generally are victims of abuse themselves of some form or other, and will tend to have low self-esteems and lash out at people who they see as maybe bringing that out in them again. So you have somebody who, again, he's like in the car, going back to that car, I'm so big and important. And his son tells him, you don't know crap about crap. He's threatening him. He's threatening his place. He's threatening his accomplishments, all of this stuff. He's making him feel small. So he lashes out.
And when it comes to Janet, Janet is staying to protect Chase. I've been in that situation where my mom was the protector. And that's rough. So, you know, for those of you who are like, well, why don't you just leave? It's not easy to leave.
Again, average of 7 times before an abuse victim can leave their abuser.
Did Robert do the right thing in giving Janet an ability to protect herself and Chase?
I think we could debate that until the sun comes up and never come to a clear answer.
That's fair enough.
Agreed.
So we're in agreement. Janet actually shot Victor to protect Victor from basically killing Chase. Because what it was. That's what it looked to me like. Victor was going in for the death blow there with the fistagon. And
if not the death blow, he was certainly not going to put the fistagon down, and he was certainly going to seriously hurt Chase.
Like he hadn't already, but I mean, the big stuff was about to come because the fistagon was fully charged. All 3 barrels were getting ready to go, and Janet had to do something. So in that moment, I'm not blaming Janet on that 1v1 moment for what she did. I'm glad she was there to stop Chase from getting killed, because that's what I think would have happened. Now, I have no idea what's going to happen next. The fallout will undoubtedly be in the next episode. And Michelle, you've seen the next episode and everything. But this is going to be hard to rebound from. Although it's a TV show, so Jonah shows up and says, make everything better. Maybe everything's better right away. I don't know. But this is a huge thing, I think, for this whole series, this one moment.
Yeah, I think, as we said at the beginning of the episode, this is a refraction point. This is where things change. There's a point where things change.
Or can change, yeah.
And, well, this is a point where things change one way or the other. And it looks like, with the whole don't pick up the fistagon things, it is changing in a certain way that leads to an outcome that we may have seen a glimpse of. It could have changed a different way, and maybe it didn't. So we'll see.
Okay. Michelle, is there anything else you want to say about this episode?
Nico and the staff. That comes, again, pay attention to the lame explanation that Tina gives Nico about what the staff is, because it is a lame explanation. I will give you that much.
That we had last episode?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That whole explanation that was lame.
It was created in a lab with special technology.
Yeah, because the way Nico and that wand develop and everything, that does, again, that also has a big repercussion in season 2. So that's something that I, you know, pay attention to.
Okay. Learn anything else about this episode?
Nope. I think I've said pretty much all I need to say.
And me too. Next Sunday, we'll be talking about Runaways, season 1, episode 8, Tsunami. And I can't wait to get there. It's going to be kind of a hard week for me to wait a week, because I really did want to go in the next episode, but I stopped myself. And it's hard to do because it automatically goes. I mean, I know I talked about it before, but it's like, no, stop. I don't want to see anymore. Just want to wait because I'm podcasting on it. And so that's what we'll be talking about next week. In the meantime, we have a special announcement this week. And we are pleased to announce that we have another new addition to the Gunna Geek Network. That's right. Play Comics is a show that looks at video games based on comic properties and how faithful those games stay to source material. Chris has a bunch of people on his podcast. He generally has somebody new come on the show every week to talk about a specific game that they might be playing, video game, and the comics that it is based off. So you can catch that at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Lauren, we've got some news this week, and actually, we'll start out with some good news.
We do indeed. First of all, Captain Marvel breaks $1 billion at the box office.
Billion!
$1 billion! So it is the seventh movie to break $1 billion at the box office.
Not seventh total movie, seventh MCU movie.
No, the seventh
movie.
Marvel movie. I should have said that. The seventh MCU movie. So other MCU movies to break $1 billion. Avengers Infinity War, Black Panther, The Avengers, Captain America Civil War, Avengers Age of Ultron, and Iron Man 3. It's also the 18th Disney movie to gross over $1 billion, but the article does not say what those are. And the blockbuster gross is $358 million in North America and $645 million overseas. So yeah, fantastic news for Captain Marvel. I am so happy. I really, really liked it. I still need to see it again because all my plans to see it again keep falling through because I've been kind of not great health-wise past couple months. So, but yes, still very happy.
I was pretty happy to see it had broached over that $1 billion mark. Matter of fact, I specifically went to Box Office Mojo this morning when I was at my computer and I was like, huh, I wonder if it had, because I knew it was close, but I didn't know if it had enough oomph with Shazam out this weekend to make it over the top. And I was so glad to see that it had. And then I was going to talk about it if Lauren wasn't, because I'm really excited over this. And talking about Shazam, I know it's DC, but let's talk about Shazam and the fact that there are two Captain Marvels.
Okay, so this is a long article on Polygon.com. I'm not really going to go that much into it. I think I'll just leave it for people to read. But it's the story of why there are two Captain Marvels, and it goes all the way back to 1938 when, 1939 was when Billy Batson was created, who was the original Captain Marvel. Well, original Captain Marvel. He would say Shazam turned into, you know, go from being a 13-year-old homeless paperboy to Captain Marvel. There's a whole lot of lawsuits involved and a whole lot, just so many lawsuits. It's very confusing. You just kind of need to sit down and read the article. Or if you go to the Alamo Drafthouse showing of, I think, either Shazam or Captain Marvel. I know they did at my showing of Captain Marvel. They'll have a little pre-show explaining, okay, this is why these two characters exist and why their names are the way they are. But yeah, it's a whole thing that goes back to the 30s, many lawsuits, and how back in 2011, they were like, let's just call him Shazam. That's what everyone calls him anyway. We give up.
Yeah, especially since the Shazam TV show, right? In the 80s, I want to say, maybe 70s. I can't remember when it was.
I think the late 70s. Yeah. I don't know. Sounds right. But yeah, I still need to see that movie. Everybody I know who's seen it said it was a lot of fun, and fun movies are kind of what I'm looking for these days.
You're talking about Shazam.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, staying within the movie theaters, we're going to talk about day one ticket sales for Avengers Endgame.
According to Fandango, Avengers Endgame gave The Force Awakens the snap as the top-selling pre-sale title in the first 24 hours. So on their Twitter account, they have a little graphic of the top-selling movies. So number one is at the top, Avengers Endgame. Number two is Force Awakens. Number three, Last Jedi. Number four, Rogue One. And then number five, Infinity War. So it's a nice little Star Wars sandwich with the Avengers movies as a bread.
I'm not surprised, especially with the suspense on this. I a little inside baseball. So Michelle and I podcast on Starling Tribune about the CW TV show Arrow, and we record Thursday nights. Well, this is coming out Thursday night, the 25th of April. And I was just preparing to go see the movie on Friday night, the 26th. But then we got a message from Chris, our co-host on Starling Tribune, said, I'm not going to make the podcast on Thursday night. We're going to go see it. I'm like, gosh, dang it. Might as well buy tickets. So I did. And I'm going opening night as well, which means that we had to find another recording time for Starling Tribune. But I was part of that record-breaking ticket sales. I know I said I wouldn't go see it opening night, but because of Chris's actions, I decided to go see it opening night.
Yep, it is my birthday present.
Happy
birthday.
I am
so happy. Yeah. Well, not yet, but it Avengers Endgame actually comes out on my birthday.
It's only a couple of weeks away. Happy birthday.
Yeah. Well, early thank you.
Okay. So we got other things going on in the MCU, right?
We do. We have some Eternals news. Kumail Nanjiani is in talk to join the Eternals. So we talked a little bit about the Eternals last week with Angelina Jolie possibly joining. It seems more and more likely that she'll be playing Cersei, an outgoing Eternal who is not afraid to move amongst humankind. We don't know who Kumail Nanjiani will be playing yet, if he does in fact join. Kumail is a comedian, and a really funny one in my opinion, who was actually nominated for an Academy Award for co-writing the movie The Big Sick with his wife Emily Gordon, which I really liked that movie. It's a good look about being in a relationship with somebody with a chronic illness at a really weird time. And it's based on their actual relationship. And anyway, he's also currently able to be seen in the first episode of the Twilight Zone reboot headed by Jordan Peele. And you can see that, I think, for free on YouTube, although the rest of it is all on CBS All Access.
Boo.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to pick it up because I love me some Twilight Zone and I love me some Jordan Peele. And I might as well watch Star Trek Discovery. But anyway, Kumail Nanjiani, he's really funny. He's a good actor. And it looks like he will also be in Men in Black International, which opens on June 14th of this year. And then he will be with Dave Bautista in the action comedy Stuber, which opens July 12th.
As much as a fan of I am of Men in Black, I don't know if I'm going to be able to see that in theaters. I might have to wait for the video release.
Oh, God, I cannot wait for it. I love Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson so much.
Yeah, I hope it's really good and as good as all the rest of them have been. I will say the whole Men in Black series has been fun for me. I've enjoyed every movie, but I just don't know if it's going to be a theater movie for me. Anyway, so moving on from the Eternals, we also have some Black Widow news.
We do. We have some new possible casting. Rachel Weisz and David Harbour are rumored to be joining the movie. Again, we don't know who they'll be playing. David Harbour, you can see him in Stranger Things and the upcoming Hellboy reboot, which I'm very excited about. And Rachel Weisz, you can see her in, I don't know, everything. The Mummy movies, which is still one of my favorite movie series ever. She was recently nominated for an Oscar for her role in The Favorite. And yeah, just, I don't know, every cast announcement gets me more and more excited. Just please don't be a bad movie. That's all I want.
Marvel has yet to lay a stinker on a movie. They've had a stinker in a TV series and a streaming series, but not a movie yet.
Still not a fan of Age of Ultron, but I don't know. They've been on a series of good hits lately.
Okay.
There's Dark World, Iron Man 2.
I liked both of those, honestly.
There were Marvel. Okay, so one of the reasons why I am watching all of the Marvel movies prior, or trying to get them in prior to Endgame, is I want to go back to the rank. We used to do this ranking of all the movies on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I have no idea where things stand anymore. I mean, I could start with the old list, which is what I'm going to do, and then kind of factor in other movies from there, but I got to get a sense of them again, because there's 23 of them, and there's going to be 24 in a few weeks. So where does everything hit? I don't know. The other thing I want to say about this particular news is David Harbour. I had him on several of my casting want lists for the broader Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I'm almost disappointed that he's been cast in this Black Widow movie because I just don't know what the longevity of the Black Widow movie is. I just don't want it to be a one and done for him. I think he deserves more than that. And moving on, so we'll put Black Widow in our rearview mirror, and we will go talk about, I guess, Wakanda.
A little bit of Wakanda, a little bit of mutants. Alexandra Shipp, who is currently playing Storm in the X-Men First Classiverse, you can see her in the upcoming Dark Phoenix, has said that she does not want Storm's relationship with T'Challa to be in the MCU. So the article isn't pulling up for me right now, but she is quoted at WonderCon as saying, "I don't think Storm needs T'Challa, and I think she needs her own movie. It doesn't have to be me, it just needs to be made. A woman does not need a man in order to give her validity, and she has also been around longer than him, both of which are true.
And unfortunately, I think that Kevin Feige has come out and he said that nobody is coming back from the Fox mutant verse except for Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. So I don't know if she would be included in this, but she is speaking about the character in general and not necessarily her playing the character. So that's good.
Yeah. And actually, when I remember when the whole Storm getting married to T'Challa in the comics happened, and it was such a huge thing because there was like no build up to it. And a bunch of fans were like, why are you making just like the only famous black characters get married when they've barely exchanged two words previously? And there's fans who liked it. There's fans who didn't like it. The characters are now divorced. Storm has been in relationships with a lot of characters, including like Wolverine in the Marvel Avengers Adventures series. She was dating Thor, which I think makes a lot of sense. But anyway, Forge, I think she might actually be back with Forge in the comics right now.
Oh, I think she is. I think she is, at least in the Uncanny verse.
Yes. And I've honestly, with the comics, with the movies right now, I really like the whole thing that Nakia and T'Challa have. So, yeah, and again, characters really don't need to be defined by their relationships. That's what fan fiction is for. So let's just focus on having good stories for the characters. And anything involving relationships can happen kind of as an afterthought.
Hmm. Well, I think that was a good spat of news this week. I liked it. Every single story. So all good stuff. And with that, let's move on into the feedback. Hey, Lauren, what do we got from Twitter this week?
We have a couple of things from Twitter. First of all, from @BornToEatBacon. I doubt you have noticed, but Marvel restricts vendors from displaying pictures of figures related to a movie until after the release. Until now, action figures and statues for Endgame are popping up all over the internet. That is, those that survived.
Don't!
I actually do know about this because a similar thing happens in Star Wars. We have like the figures that are released previous to the movies, and then all of the more spoilery ones that are released after. And that's how people have all these theories about, oh my God, this character's going to be so important, which is how Constable Zuvio became a thing. And this character was never in the movie. But yeah. Disney properties, Marvel especially, even pre-Disney, has always been very secretive about all of its stuff, to the point where I saw an interview the other day that they have basically not given Tom Holland any script pages this time around to try to keep him from spoiling anything.
I saw that too, where he's only given like his pages. He doesn't really know sometimes who he's acting with or who's like interacting with each other in the same scene, because they've officially stated he just can't keep his mouth shut.
Yeah, they're just like, you're mad, you're happy, go.
Oh, that's so funny. We can't even give you your lines.
I saw a blind item that said that because of that, they might be considering replacing him because he can't keep his mouth shut.
I wonder if they shoot fake scenes just to fake him out.
Oh, God. But yeah, the whole, all this stuff popping out before the movie, I'm curious how much of that is deliberate, because there are always the deliberate hype people up leaks, and how much of it is honestly, yeah, vendors and people who get their hands on stuff. And there's always a lot of that too. So it's question mark.
I'm trying to stay spoiler free, except for the trailers, which we've already talked about, have fake scenes in it and stuff like that. But I'm just going to go and have fun watching Endgame, because it's got to be better than Infinity War for me. I mean, just me personally. I know y'all loved it. I was just like, I'm not a big Empire Strikes Back guy either. So probably the same issues I've got going on with the story. But anyway, looking forward to seeing Endgame. What else we got from Twitter?
We also have, via Andy Migna, a Fitzsimmons, who is head sculptor on Star Wars and Game of Thrones, with a link to this guy, Darren Fitzsimmons. So I'm looking at all the stuff that he's worked on. This guy, okay, he started working, it looks like, back in 1999 on the movie Sleepy Hollow. He's done a lot of props. He's done sculpting. He's worked on things like the Harry Potter movies, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, X-Men First Class, John Carter, 300 Rise of an Empire, King Arthur Legend of the Sword, and, of course, Star Wars Last Jedi, Star Wars Episode 9, and Game of Thrones, where he is the head of department sculptor. This looks like his Pinterest page that I found. It's just stuff that's kind of inspired him. So that looks cool. But it looks like he's the guy who sculpted like the dragon skulls. Yeah, here it is on winteriscoming.net. Game of Thrones' head sculptor talks about making that huge dragon skull. So he said things like, I enjoy being a sculptor for film and having my work interactive and play a role in telling the story. So that giant skull that at one point Arya hides in, oh wait, no. This might be a different skull. This is when they're looking at like, hey, here's a giant crossbow that can kill a dragon. It's a skull that measures 32 feet by 20 feet by 15 feet high. He worked with a team of four sculptors over 6 weeks from start to finish.
Impressive.
Yeah. So this is a very talented Fitzsimmons. I think we can all agree that any Fitzsimmons is talented. So thank you for bringing that to our attention, Andy. That's really cool.
That was. And guys, you know, I think the Wilders gave me a great idea. And I'm going to have to go here in a second and ship my kids out to a cousin's house, right? So we need to get this one out. Kids, I'm not kidding. Looking at you. Thank you very much to all the other listeners for still being subscribed and communicating back with us and enjoying this ride with the Runways. Also, by the time this comes out, all of the Punisher series will be out. So if you haven't caught that, go back into our back catalog and listen to all the great words that we had to say about Punisher and why it was so difficult for us at the very end.
Thank you to everybody who reaches out to us on Twitter, who sends us news articles. You make our jobs so much easier. We love knowing that you're out there, that you like this stuff just as much as we do. Yeah, just thank you guys so, so much.
Yeah, thank you to everyone who listens. Thank you, you know, Lauren, Haley, and SP for your support while I have been ill. And everybody, remember, be high on life.
Yeah, be high on life, not
anything else. Nothing else. Just be high on life.
Be high on life. And again, welcome back, Michelle. We missed you.
Thank you.
It's great to have you back here. I know you did last week on Starling Tribune, but it's great to have you here on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well. And with that, until next time, I'm Director SP.
I'm Agent Lauren.
And I'm Consultant Michelle.
See everybody next time. Bye.
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 Thank you for listening. If you want to leave us feedback, go to gunnageek.com and you will find all our contact information and other shows. You can also visit legendsofshield.com where you'll find our complete archive of podcasts. The music heard on this podcast is by Kevin MacLeod, found at incompetech.com, and also artists on pond5.com and audiojungle.net. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of the individual hosts and do not represent Stargate Pioneer Productions, Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., or Gunna Geek. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the property of the Disney Corporation, Marvel Studios, and ABC. No infringement is intended.
So when does S.H.I.E.L.D. come back?
May 10th.
Really? That's soon?
It's 2 weeks after Endgame comes out. My guess is they want to try to get the season in during the summer and then start right up, well, right up, quote unquote, in the fall for a full season 7, like at the normal time, like September, October timeframe. Because if I remember right, most of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. seasons have started like September 23rd ish. So they might want to be aiming for that. Who knows? And I don't know how many episodes there are. I mean, it might be a mid-season replacement anyway in January, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why if it comes back May 10th, we have 5 Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes between now and then, and that would include an episode of Endgame. So that would be the 4 of 7, 8, 9, 10 of Runaways, and then Endgame takes us right up to it. I saw that Captain Marvel broke 1 billion. I checked the Box Office Mojo this morning and it was just like 36,000 over 1 billion or something like that. I was like, you made it.
Suck it in, cells.
Yep. It's the 7th Marvel movie to do it.
Yep.
This podcast episode, it's over. It's done. It's time to get on with your regular life. Go out and enjoy. Go be with your friends, with family. Go do some fun stuff. Go see some fun stuff. Just go have fun. And then let us know what you did on our Twitter account, @LegendsOfShield. See you guys next week.
Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is copyright 2013 through 2019.